Hello, I'm Professor Liu. Welcome to our live stream. I'm here today with Art Prof teaching artist Deepti Menon. And today we are going to dig deep into Deepti's history as an artist. If you would like to grow as an artist and you can't afford an art class, we've got everything you need here at Art Prof, critiques and tutorials. All right, guys. I have a feeling you know where we're starting in this artistic journey. We've got some baby photos of Deepti to keep you guys entertained, to show you how cute we all were from the very first day. So Deepti, as a child, when did you know that art was going to be a part of your life in some way?
Honestly, I can't remember a part of my life when art wasn't a huge part of it. Like, even in this stage of my life, when I was just coloring books, like, you can see how proudly I'm posing in front of my artwork, which admittedly, I think my mom colored those because I didn't like what I did. But I was always doing art, even from like the smallest little baby photos. I was always doing art. And I truly can't remember a moment in my life when it wasn't a part of it. One of my like most favorite moments or memories from when I was a kid was when we first moved to the US, which I moved to the US when I was 2. We had this like dingy little side table, like super immigrant style. My parents were really young. My dad had a job, my mom didn't. And there was this like dingy little side coffee table that my mom and I used to crawl under and draw on the underside of because I really wanted to draw on walls. But my mom will tell you that I was a really obedient kid. Like, I was very, like, I really understood what was right and wrong from a very young age. So I knew that I couldn't draw on walls, but every kid has that tendency. So I would crawl under the table and she would let me draw under there. So we used to draw under there. And I don't know where that table is, but like, it's dead and gone and it's repurposed and recycled. But I wish I could see what was under that table.
So you are a very productive child. I mean, this is sort of a ton of artwork that we're seeing here. Did you ever take classes or anything like that?
Yeah. So one thing that was pretty like a big memory of growing up was that my mom really wanted me to try everything. So I have played about every sport, done every extracurricular like that you can imagine, like truly. But sometimes it would last for a week. Sometimes it would last for a year. But the one thing I stuck with from the get-go was art. So I took classes starting, I probably like kindergarten, first grade. But when I was in fourth grade, I started going to this teacher. So that was still elementary school. And basically everything that you've been showing past the oil paintings just now are things that I started working with her. And she introduced me to a ton of mediums, really taught me to draw from life, really taught me to be bold and explore. She actually reminds me a lot of you, Clara. Like, and you, like when I met you, I was like, I think this is her reincarnated because she was never super nice to me, which I would say that when I was your student, you were never super nice to me, but you were like, you were a very motherly figure. Like, I felt very like attached to you and I felt very attached to her, but never in a way where I was like, oh, she's so sweet. I would be like, no, she expects a lot from me. So kind of everything you're seeing here, except for like sketchbook pages, I did under her supervision. And for a long time, it was just what I did on my weekends. I would go to art class and I was super privileged and lucky that my parents put me in this art class, but it was also just like a woman down the street and she rented a little studio and there was like so many of us packed in there. So it, at no point was it what I thought my career was going to be. It was just how I enjoyed spending my weekends and my parents got to get rid of me for a couple hours.
I'm sure that's exactly what they were thinking at the time. So then eventually you went to high school and what was that like? Was high school difficult for you trying to be an artist or were you the art kid? How was it?
It was interesting. It wasn't until a good while into high school that I started considering art as like a higher education, post-high school career. But I grew up in the Silicon Valley in California. So I went to a very like very math and science high school. And like, I think I was the only kid maybe from my high school or like less than 5 who pursued like going to an art school. I don't know if that's changed, but you know, people's lives change. But when I was graduating, I was very aware that I was like an outlier. So I actually didn't take art classes in high school until my junior year. I was just happy to take classes with my teacher outside of school. And I started amping up how many times I went there. But even at that point, I didn't think of it as a portfolio necessarily, because I enjoyed going to class, but I didn't want to go to college. But then around this phase, when you're seeing like a dramatic shift kind of in my, you know, style and what I'm doing, is when I started realizing I did want to go to art school. So I was like, oh shoot. And so I got into my high school art classes, but I was like the junior in the freshman art class, and I was in two art classes, and I had my counselor like bend over backwards so that I didn't have to take like this class so I could do the art classes. But these are like, so this was something I did in my high school art class, this portrait of my mom, which she really doesn't like. I don't even understand why. She looks somewhat demonic, which I didn't mean to do, but the color palette lends to that. But yeah, it was interesting because nobody ever in high school, like, didn't, it wasn't like I wasn't encouraged to be an artist, but that was never something that was told to me as a viable career option. I also grew up in a community that's like a lot of immigrants, and I think it's rarer sometimes to see immigrant communities like pursuing the arts, especially in the community I grew up in, because it was in the tech industry. So a lot of people, our parents moved here from a different country because they had a job offer in the tech industry. So that's kind of like the environment that a lot of us knew, was like engineers and doctor. So it was, I just didn't know anyone in my immediate family who was an artist. It didn't seem attainable. But again, this art teacher that I had outside of school, a lot of her students built their portfolios in her class, and they would come back and visit, which is something I did also when I was in college. And like, I started noticing, I was like, these people look like me, and they were in my class with me. Like, I've seen them for the past couple of years. They were always older than me, but now they're like working at Disney, or like they're designing handbags. And they're like, I was like always overhearing these conversations, and I was like, wait a second, like, why, who are you? Like, who are we? Like, am I in this community? So that's kind of when the cogs in my head, the wheels started churning.
And you also had a number of early influences as a young artist, Tim Burton, who I'm sure some of you guys have seen a bunch of his films, and he's actually a much more prolific artist than I think people know. Like, he's done like really beautiful character designs and little sketches and things. So when did you first see Tim Burton's work as a kid?
It was probably early high school, like ninth grade. Well, I watched The Nightmare Before Christmas as a kid, and but that he didn't direct. He was just involved, I think, in the design of it and was a producer. But really in high school was when I started looking at his drawings. And I remember I was probably in the 10th grade, but I was in LA for vacation, and LACMA, the museum in LA, was having this like retrospective called like The Art of Tim Burton. And it was a bunch of his sketchbook pages just framed and like around. And I think this was probably, this image that we're seeing was probably there, but it was just a ton of these kind of like sketchy, fun drawings. And I was so used to his live action work. I thought of him as a director for like Edward Scissorhands and all of his live action Beetlejuice, which are all films I really enjoyed. But then I noticed that he was an animator, and I watched this film Vincent that he did when I believe he was a student at Kyle Arts. And I had no idea that he was an animator and had all of these like technical skills. And from a really young age, I was super fascinated with the film industry and being an actor and being a director. But that seemed like so far-fetched and so unattainable. But then I was like, oh, I'm an artist. I'm good at drawing. I like being an animator seemed like a step that I could get towards. And then seeing him be an animator and then move towards live action and doing all of these other really cool things. Like, he really has created a career for himself that seems very niche and very perfect for him. And he works with the actors he wants to work with. And I was like, all that from going to art school. That's really, really cool. So that's kind of when I started being like, okay, that's interesting. And I really loved his style and his quirkiness. And then I really got into like these strange films like The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari. I believe this is like German Expressionist film. I'm not 100% sure. Maybe someone in the comments can tell me, but I think it's categorized as like German Expressionist film. But I loved like watching live action films that paid so much attention to set design and lighting and costuming. And that was really cool for me, like creating these really creepy, strange environments. So it almost felt wrong that I was watching this. Like it felt like a horror film that I wasn't allowed to watch. So I don't know. It was like I was being exposed to a bunch of different kinds of films and filmmakers that just didn't feel like what I was seeing at the movie theater. Tim Burton was someone that I was seeing at the movie theater, but not his like short films and not his sketchbooks. Like I feel like I uncovered this stuff. So I think that was the start of me being like understanding like the nitty gritty of what it means to be a filmmaker and what it means to be an artist and how people get to a bigger, more like platform. It's not as scary. So that's probably ninth grade that I started thinking about that. And I was like, okay, maybe I can do this.
And what about more mainstream stuff? Because you've definitely watched your share of cartoons. I mean, Ren and Stimpy was also an influence, and I can totally see it for obvious reasons. But was this stuff you just watched all the time or what?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in the 90s, so this was just my jam. Like, it was just always on TV. And, like, 90s cartoons are so good. I will say it again and again and again, but, like, Ren and Stimpy, Cat Dog, Hey Arnold, like, those cartoons, or, like, early 2000s are just, like, a different league, in my opinion, than, like, what's on TV today. Because the character designs are so crazy, freaky. They all have, like, a little edge to them. But I just grew up watching those. But I think I was one of the people, few people that it, like, stuck with me. Like, I was always watching them. Courage the Cowardly Dog, all that stuff. I kept watching throughout high school. I think a lot of people stopped watching cartoons. But I remember watching these things and being, oh, my gosh, this episode of SpongeBob gave me the most anxiety of my entire life. Like, to this day, I will, like, watch this episode of SpongeBob to just understand how to create, like, anxiety and unsettlement in an audience member, because this moment where he's like so hungry, he's trying to, if you haven't seen this episode of SpongeBob, it's called Rock Bottom, please watch it. It'll give you nightmares. But I would like analyze cartoons like this and just be like, wow, this feeling that it gives me and these crazy characters, it would just excite me so much. And to think that like people did this just with like their hand and a little bit of technology, because in the 90s, all of like it wasn't really computerized. So much of animation was painted on actual cells. So I thought that was awesome. And it just got me really, really excited. And I love these cartoons. So I think I grew up watching them, but at a certain point I started rewatching them and being so excited by them. And then that was kind of when I was like, okay, maybe this is what I want to do.
Well, I think what's really cool is that we're talking about high school here, and yet SpongeBob was very influential just a few weeks ago. And so what I think is really fun about a lot of these streams is seeing how these images come back, images from 20 years ago that you never really thought were going to go that deep, really are a part of you in a way. Now, how about this film?
So Bollywood in general was pretty influential to me. I didn't really realize it, but my mom watches a ton of Bollywood films, and I just grew up watching them with her, and just it was always on. And I always was kind of embarrassed of, I mean, every like immigrant kid is embarrassed of their whatever, and I never really thought anything of it. But like late high school was when I started seeing Bollywood films as like a kind of a spectacle in and of itself. Like a lot of people make fun of Bollywood films for being so over the top, but like so was Riverdale on CW, you know, like, and it's one of the most popular shows on TV and has horrible acting. And I'm not saying that Bollywood's horrible acting, but I think as I came more into being proud of my culture and myself, I started realizing how influential Bollywood films were to me. And like, I think what it has to do with animation and how I am as a filmmaker is like the attention to detail that Bollywood films put into the costume. They all have song and dance. Like this film especially I put into the slideshow because like it's like an epic. Like it's studied, and this director is a really, really well known for his set design. And I wrote a whole like 20 page paper of him in college on his set design and stuff. But it's just the attention to detail and the kind of like love that India has for filmmaking and like how big movies are in Indian culture and how much it like means to the community and like the music in it and the lighting and the costumes and the makeup and everything. And also just like in dance, like in the slide of the girl holding her hand, like all of that means something. And like it's so minuscule. And I was like, that's all what animation is. Everything is so much like minuscule and every little thing matters. And I think in Bollywood, that's such a huge like part of Bollywood, which I think is really beautiful.
Yeah, we have a lot of Bollywood fans here. Kate is saying Dev Das is it. Neil says Bollywood films are so amazing. Cerulean says lots of beautiful outfits. And Kate is also saying the storytelling is so sumptuous. I think it's great. I mean, I have not watched a lot of Bollywood, but I think what's cool about some of these streams is that you guys see all of us pulling from so many different places, right? It's like, you're not a Bollywood director, but it influences you in some way.
Definitely, yeah.
And so how did your art progress in high school?
I think I started taking art more seriously, and I kind of had this like someone slapped me across the face moment of like realizing I was like, okay, I definitely want to go to art school, but also this is going to freak my parents out. So I'm going to have a plan, and I'm going to get into every single art school that I applied to, and I'm going to prove to them that I can do this. So I started, instead of going just on the weekends to my art teacher outside of school, I started going every single day for like 4 hours, and I was there. Like school would end, I would go there, I'd come home, it was nighttime, I'd do homework, I'd sleep like 2 hours, and I was back at it again. Like for my last 2 years of high school, I was moving to make my portfolio, and I wouldn't recommend that to anyone, but it worked. I got into like every art school I applied to. And these are my super cringy portfolio pieces. Oh my gosh, I want to cry. But yeah, like I think I started taking art a lot more seriously and like really putting a lot of energy into it. For a long time, art was just an outlet and it was something I was good at. And when I was doing group projects, I would choose to be the graphic designer, or I would choose to, you know, illustrate the book cover or whatever. I would lean towards doing an artistic thing. And then I kind of realized, like, why am I always choosing to do this? Maybe this is what I want to do with my life. And then I started seeing it as a viable career option. So I got very serious. When I put my mind to something, I get very like, okay, what's my 1 month plan? What's my 2 year plan? And like, it gets very intense very quickly. So it got very intense very quickly. And then I just started like, you see a jump because I go from like high school work, which is like, okay, you know, whatever, to my portfolio, which you can see I've spent hours and hours and hours. And that kind of just happened over between the summer of my sophomore year of high school and my junior year. I like told my teacher, I was like, please help. Like, I'm very late to this, because she starts training kids who want to go to art school like eighth grade summer into ninth grade, you know? So I was like 2 years behind, and she, like I said, she was never like, okay, don't worry, honey, you got this. She was like, all right, well, clock's a ticking, DP. And you know, she's known me since I was in fourth grade. So she had no like, and my art teachers in high school were like, we don't know who you are. And I was like, I know. And I'm begging you to let me into your freshman year class. I am a junior, but please let me into your level one and level two. So I was just like, we got to make this work, guys. Like I'm going to art school. Sorry. Like I was going to be a veterinarian, and I was like, change of plans. AP bio is still happening, but like, I'm going to be an artist. And I really just started thinking of art more analytically and being like, I want to learn how to use this medium. I want to explore all these things. And it was no longer just like a treat. It was very much like a goal of mine to reach a certain point. But at the end of the day, the nice thing was that even though I was spending so much time making work and like having mental breakdowns over how hard I was working, I was still enjoying myself so much. Like, I loved being in art class after school, and I loved showing my work, and I loved talking about it, and I loved getting bad feedback and having people tell me I needed to work harder, because I was just like, well, I'm gonna get into school and I'm gonna meet my goals and I'm gonna be happy at one point that I did this. And I was. So that felt really good.
Well, I'm really glad that you talked about really enjoying it, because I do feel that a lot of people in high school, especially, there's so much pressure to do all these things and check off all those boxes. And sometimes you step back, you say, you know what? I don't know if I really like this. It's like you have to question why you're doing things. And it doesn't seem like you had any questioning at all.
as far as the art thing goes. I will note though that like in retrospect, I do think because I jolted into it, so many of my portfolio pieces, I think, lack some personality, in my opinion, or lack like a little bit of personality, because I was trying so hard to just get my portfolio done and make good portfolio pieces that sometimes I'm like, wow, like I feel like I really found my style and found what I enjoyed doing like way into college. And my high school portfolio, even though it got me into school, felt very like bland to me. Like technically skilled and conceptually okay, but I was like, I knew that there was more going on. I was just afraid to dive into it because I felt like it would take too long to explore that idea. And I didn't have a lot of time. So yeah.
So we have a question from Neil, who's saying, does the portfolio really take that long? I just started late April 2020. I feel self-conscious knowing how much work DeepD made.
I mean, I think for each person, you work at different speeds. I think for me, I really wanted to make a lot of work and have the option of picking and choosing what I wanted to put in my portfolio. Some people just make 20 pieces and work really hard, and I think it's fine. I think to each their own. Also, because I was doing art as a leisurely thing, I had to learn how to work in a productive manner. I would go to my class on the weekend and my teacher wouldn't be pushing me because I'd just be there as I had been there for years past, just there drinking my Starbucks and having a jolly old time. And all of a sudden I like want to go to art school. And she's like, okay, well, have you, you've never worked with charcoal or you've never done a self-portrait. Like, let's do that. So suddenly for me, the like machine was moving because I was like, I need to train myself just how to produce work in the same way that I was like taking tests in my math and science school. You know, it became a different shift. So I think for each person, like you should be totally fine just knowing how you are. And I don't think people need to do what I did. But I think for my own mental health, actually, it was better because I'm the type of person that I would rather be at like, you know, all guns blazing, full speed ahead and know that I gave it my all. Rather than the other way. But that's like my personality type and it's not healthy for a lot of people, including myself.
I just want to give a shout out to Tom G. Thank you so much for the super chat. We greatly appreciate your support here at Art Prof. And then you landed at the Rhode Island School of Design doing your bachelor's. And you had some teacher spring semester. I think we know who that is.
Yes, I have the infamous Clara Lou as my teacher. Spring semester, I did a whole semester hearing whispers in the hallway of how terrifying she was. And then I got my syllabus for spring semester and it said Clara Lou and I pooped my pants. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm dropping out, not going to do this. But the images that you're seeing are actually the very first two projects I did in your class. My zipper drawing, which you told me, you said, if this is a fuzzy jacket, DeepD, I want to see it be fuzzy. And I was like, okay, cool. Nope, take it. Because it was a fuzzy jacket. And as you can see, I was trying to show fuzzy a little bit with my little fuzzies. But you were right, Clara. I should have gone all the way fuzzy. But for 18-year-old DeepD, I would say that was okay. This was my second project. And I actually remember the critique you gave me for almost
all. I can't believe you guys remember anything I ever said to you. Half the time I talk to students, I feel like it's in one ear, out the other.
No, I remember this one because this one you were very proud of me and you said that I made a lot of progress from that previous one because this was the second piece. But I remember your biggest qualm was that negative backboard space in the top left corner. You were just like, I just don't, yeah, like you were not about that. But like in retrospect, I agree with you. If someone was showing me this, I would. But this was drawn from life and I remember these were big drawings too. Like I don't, for scale, like how large were they? They were like 6 feet by 4 feet or something.
Three feet by 4 feet. And I made you guys do one every week is a lot.
Yeah. With for this sure. Was lithograph crayon. My, oh my.
Can of rice.
Yep.
So then how was RISD in general? What was your art school experience like?
It was interesting. I would say my freshman year, this was a banana peel I drew in your class. I also remember the critique I got and it's like, I'm not going to go through all of it, but take me down memory lane. But I really enjoyed my freshman year at RISD was probably my favorite year because I was an orientation leader and this is a picture of all the tattoos on my arm. You had to like indicate yourself to your freshman when you were an orientation leader somehow. So I just put a bunch of temp tattoos on my arm and it took like a month for all of them to come off. It was so gross. But this is me saying hi. My RISD experience was lovely. I think my favorite thing about my RISD experience are the people that I met. To this day, my RISD friends are like my siblings. I love them so much. And they truly, like, in a career perspective, I get so many jobs through my RISD friends. I make, like, it really is this kind of like network of people. And I'm not a very networky people, but just like my best friends are the people that help me grow and vice versa. So that's my favorite thing. But my freshman year at RISD is probably the hardest I've worked in my entire life. I was truly bionic. Like, I have no words for what I did my freshman year. And I will never do that again. But it was also the most fun I've ever had and the closest I've ever had. And I think, like, a lot of the work I make now and a lot of things I think about now just on a daily basis is how, like, growing up, I really shunned my culture and was very embarrassed of who I was. And when I went to RISD, it was the first time that I had, like, close friends who were Indian and they were from India. And I think one thing that RISD really did for me was make me super, super proud of who I am and also really confident. I would say that I was, like, kind of confident in high school. I was, like, cool with who I was. But, like, if people know me now, I just, like, don't care. And I'm very comfortable with who I am. And I think that came out of RISD because, like, Clara, don't you feel like in the RISD environment, things are very just, I mean, it's obviously weird in some ways, but this is the first animation I ever made, you guys, in my whole entire life. This is the first animation I made this day one of sophomore year in the film department. It was a metamorphosis exercise, and it was shot, like, I think 30 frames a second, which is why it's so jittery looking, but yeah, RISD was wonderful. I mean, it really, I think I grew so much as a person. I'm also an only child, so it was my first time being away from home for so long, and I don't know. It was a really great experience, and I learned a lot. It had its ups and it had its downs, but I think I learned a lot. And the biggest thing it did for me is the people I met, and for sure, me growing as a person. I'm, like, really, really happy with the journey from, like, day one of freshman year being super insecure and not really believing in myself to, like, where I am now, like, 8 years later. And I'm, like, a completely different person, I would say, but I'm, like, really happy. And I think that has so much to do with, like, my professors and my friends and just the environment of going to art school.
Well, really, the people are what make the school what it is. Because yeah. I hear a lot of people saying, oh, well, this school has really nice painting facilities. And I'm like, it doesn't matter how nice the studio is if you don't have a really strong student body and really good professors. And so I think you're right that when it comes down to it, it's those personalities, it's those people and the relationships that you create. So tell us about this one. This is a stop motion piece.
This was my sophomore year of RISD 2, I believe. And you're when in the film department, you're supposed to take animation courses and live action courses. So I took a bunch of core animation classes, and this was one of the projects. Is we made wire armatures, just really rudimentary armatures, and we had to learn how to give it a walk cycle, but give it kind of a emotion or a feeling. So I tried to create, like, a sneaky person sneaking away from, like, a shoplifting situation. And that was one of my very first projects. And then this one, which we're about to see, is a project I did later on. So that armature, we built on top of it, and we built a set, which is, like, something I was really excited with for my early influences. And we made this armature, and I created it, like, clothes and a storyline. So it wasn't just, like, learn how to do a walk cycle and give it a little bit of a story. We moved towards, like, a whole narrative and a set design and a background. And it was very, very fun to do.
Well, let's take a look, because this one actually has sound involved. So let's get that started. There we go.
So it goes
weird
on
to look at this old stuff.
Sorry, what did you say?
Does it feel weird to look at all this old work?
Oh my gosh, it feels so weird. And also I look at it and I'm trying so hard not to be like, oh my God, it's so bad, because this was many, many years ago that I made this. And I'm trying to just be like, you were learning. It was your first stop motion class. But this is another armature I made, and, like, kind of how I did it. I drew out the character and I made the armature based on it and then put foam around. So there was like so many cool projects I did that are so formative to like what I do. Like I don't do any stop motion like this anymore, but still I use so much of like what I learned in those classes to this day.
And now tell us about this film. How does this relate to your work at RISD?
This is just a film that's really stuck with me. I think I watched it when I was maybe a senior for the first time or a junior. And I really like this artist, Yuri Norstein. He's an Eastern European. I forget exactly which country he's from, but he creates like multi-plane stop motion animation. So it's like a flat down surface that the camera's looking on, and they're flat paper, or like cell plastic characters, but it's all in layers and it's really beautifully painted. And I just really liked his work because it's all very like whimsical and story-like, it's like storybook-like, but there's like an element of like uneasiness when I watch it. Like there's something about the voice acting and the scary owl. There's something of that rides the line between like, yes, I would show this to a child, but also I would feel a little weird showing it to a child because I'm a little weirded out, but it's so interesting. But then I think back to like watching Ren and Stimpy, that I feel the same way, but I watched that as a child and I never thought anything of it. But now watching Ren and Stimpy, I'm like, oh, what? Like, this is weird. So I just kind of like that, riding that line of like being whimsical and childlike and okay, but also making people feel a certain type of way and feel uncomfortable and analyze why that is. So that those were like kind of the beginning films that like, and his film is like very not uncomfortable. It's very beautiful and whimsical and lovely, but there was just something about it that kind of like rubbed me in an interesting way, and I was like, huh, what is this? So these are all films that I think were kind of formative to me. Even Tim Burton, like his stuff is really unsettling in some ways, and all of that really made me think like I really like this idea of creating work that's goofy and silly but also kind of jarring and experimental.
And so this was one of your first animation projects you did, right?
Yeah, this was really early on. It was a class exercise and we were just given a still object and then asked to make it move. And I think I did this in maybe like 30 minutes or an hour. Like it was a very quick project, but I remember it being such a aha moment to take something still, like a seashell, and make it move and give it this really interesting dynamic movement, but still have it be somewhat recognizable. So that project was really formative to me, being like, what is it to be an experimental animator? What does that mean? Like, and how, what all could you do with just like things at your fingertips? So I really started exploring with like what I could do with what I had access to. Cause also when I was a senior, I started realizing I have all these amazing facilities here at RISD, but I'm very soon not going to have access to it. But the wonders of being an animator is that you can make things just with a smartphone and a piece of paper. And it's something that I really preach on Art Prof. So that's when I started being like, okay, cool. I'm going to really like play around with like how little can I have and how much can I make?
Which actually I think is very unique for an animator, because I do feel that there's this whole world of people who want their souped up software and their gigantic cameras and equipment. And I just love the fact that you make animation so accessible. It doesn't feel like something you have to be all fancy about in order to do. It's really refreshing, in my opinion. And by the way, how did you decide on animation? Like, did you have trouble figuring out what to major in or not?
Definitely. I came in as an illustrator because you saw my portfolio. It's very illustrative and I had a lot of technical skill, especially with like observational work. So I knew I would do well in the illustration department, but I really wanted to challenge myself. And I was always super interested in filmmaking. And I always was really interested in acting, but it was always something that I just didn't feel like was attainable. And so I actually went to an open studio of the sophomores or the seniors in filmmaking when I was a freshman and saw the work that they were doing. And the department was really experimental and really allowed for a lot of exploration. And then with animation, I remember talking to a student, I don't know who they are, but they were just like talking to me about animation and being like, the thing I love about animation is that you're kind of playing God, which sounds really crazy, but like master of the universe, you're the lighting designer, you're the costume designer. And then they were like, and you're the actor. And I was like, oh my gosh, what? Like all the things I'm too scared to be, but want to be. And it's true. Like even a lot of the animation exercises I did once I was a student was to act. Like you would get, I was told, I found actually, but I was like, I'm not showing this on the stream, but a lot of videos of myself like moving really weirdly and like really acting in front of the cameras. And I would say that's like was one of my first experiences as an actor, which as many of you know, is like something I do professionally now. And I just love the like the flexibility of doing all these different things and getting to pick and choose like, okay, I want to make an animation that's really heavy on the visuals, or I want to make an animation that's really heavy on the movement. It just felt like there was so much that I could do with so little. And I enjoyed being a filmmaker, and the RISD department was really like encouraging of trying out like live action and animation. But when I got into live action, I realized that the technical aspect of the live action stuff, like the big cameras and the sound and just things going wrong, felt so scary to me. Whereas with animation, I was like, I just feel like I have way more control. So it ended up being kind of perfect for everything I was interested in.
Well, I really like this comment from Neil. They're saying animation always scared me a lot. DeepD makes it seem more approachable. Yeah, and I think that a lot of people are intimidated by the equipment and the software. And I just like making sure that, you know what, you just need a smartphone and that's pretty much it. Couple pencils, a piece of paper, and you're good to go. Yeah. Now, how about Sigmar Poke? Where do they fit?
So I saw their work at MoMA, I believe. I think it was right around the time that I was a senior about to graduate. And I really liked their work because it almost felt like a still from an animation. Like there's so much movement and like narrative happening, and there's so much depth and excitement, but it's like a, I believe these are like prints. I don't remember exactly what the material is, but I remember looking at these, and when I was in school and I was a senior, I always did kind of character-driven work. Like I did some experimental work, but it was pretty character-driven. But looking at these prints really made me like feel excited about exploring color and shape and movement and just doing things that didn't necessarily have to make sense. Again, I was just like, forget like making a story and making people understand, just like have fun and explore and like release that inner child. And it reminded me a lot of like those early marker drawings that we saw way at the beginning of the stream, just like the energy of that, like when I was a kid, and I really liked that. So after I graduated, these are like some sketches that I did. And I actually feel like the months after I graduated were some of the best time for me artistically, because I was working at a store for like $13 an hour in Providence, Rhode Island, paying like nothing in rent, like really just like I was taking a break. And I was doing all this stuff and it just had no meaning, you know, like no, I hadn't put no pressure on myself to show it to anyone. I'd post it to Instagram, maybe. I would just, and I was churning work out, Clara. And I was super sad because all my friends weren't out of Providence and I was still there. But I started drawing these like creepy heads and playing around with color and just allowing myself to like look up artists. Like I love this artist and I saw his work at MoMA as well. And just finding artists I liked. And I feel like at RISD, I kind of had laser focus of like my thesis, I'm going to graduate. And there's all these projects that's constantly clouding your head. And I really wasn't good at like finding what I liked and just taking some time to breathe. So I started like going to New York and going to museums and just spending time and sketching. And it was so formative in like, I think how I work now, which I think is really important.
Tom G is asking, how was your transition from art school into your career? A lot of people, it's pretty rough. It's not an easy transition. How was it for you?
It was definitely rough. It was not super easy, but I will say the connections I made were super useful. I had interned every single summer when I was at RISD. So I interned at Nickelodeon. So when I came back, that was kind of a option for me. I also worked as a PA on sets, on movie sets, because I still like live action stuff. So when I moved to New York, a couple of bosses that I had who worked in movies gave me a couple of gigs here and there. But I really understood the power of networking. Like my portfolio took me so far, but I was reaching out to people left and right being like, hello, I'm in the city, please. I mean, I took a break. I traveled. I went to Japan and Thailand. I took a break. I stayed in Providence. But when I moved to New York, the transition was definitely rough. It was also rough, like social wise, because you're in this like little incubator of all your best friends. And then suddenly everyone's in every corner of the world. And you're like, oh my gosh, like, who do I cry to now? Like my roommate is no longer there, you know? But I would say networking really helped. But I think honestly, this year of my life, when it's been 4 years since I graduated, has been the first year that I really feel like I've gotten a good grasp of my career, just because I also have a lot of different interests and I do a lot of different things. I've worked as an editor, I've worked as an animator, I've been an actor, and I do it all at the same time. And I think it's all really great. But this year, honestly, during the pandemic, I've been feeling like I kind of understand myself a little bit more. So sometimes you do just need that time. I've been lucky. I needed some time to just step back and figure out what I wanted. But Egon Schiele is really formative also to me, because I saw his work at the New Gallery. Yeah, in New York. It's like on Museum Mile, and it has a bunch of his work, I believe, unless I'm forgetting it. But I saw his work too, and I really liked his like strange figures and strange bodies and strange faces. And I was going through this phase of like under like making creepy little aliens and strange faces and strange bodies and exploring how I could like squash and stretch things. So and just color too was really cool.
We have a comment from Malik. They are saying, a plug for the networking videos. As a person doing art at a small liberal arts school, it gives me hope. Networking is so powerful, you guys. And you know something? When you're in college and you're standing in line at the cafeteria with somebody, you don't realize that person might be giving you a job a couple years down the line. I mean, wasn't that the case, Deepti, with a lot of people you went to school with?
Yeah, I mean, even right now I'm working on a job because my best friend, who I was in animation class with, got a gig that she couldn't do on her own. So she asked me if I wanted to do it 50-50 with her. Like, and I do the same things where I get projects and I can't do it because I have too much on my plate. And I'll just, instead of being like, oh, sorry, no, my immediate answer is, oh, sorry, no, but I have like 10 people I can recommend. And I just go to like my closest friends who I know have the skill set, and I offer them the jobs. And that's honestly, like, that and Instagram are how I get work.
So Ulo is asking, tips for networking in a nutshell, what would you tell people to do, Deepti?
Be nice to people and tell people what you want. I think it took me a long time to realize that, like, even if I was an intern, I needed to like voice what I wanted. Like, that's what I think manifesting means. A lot of people use the word manifesting and it sounds kind of fluty flaw flaw and like, oh, I'm gonna manifest this. But what I mean is, like, when you want to, like, I feel like I learned that I needed to like tell someone, hey, I really want to start making music videos, because that's something I really wanted to do. And when I started saying that, I started getting tips for how to do it, and I started meeting people who made music videos. But I think, be nice to people, tell people what you want, and then when you get to a point of getting what you want, remember to give back to other people too. And yeah.
I like this comment from Alex Kiesling, who, by the way, is going to be on one of our streams in a couple weeks to talk to you guys about freelance illustration. But this is great advice. Never burn bridges. And that goes along with being nice. You don't have to be best friends, but just don't be a jerk, guys. It goes a long way when you're not being a jerk. It really does help you quite a bit.
Yes.
Take a look at this animation. Tell us when you made this one.
So this was the summer after I graduated RISD, and it's actually, I was playing around with different animation techniques that I hadn't, you know, had too much time in school to play around with. So this is a rotoscope technique. So I had a friend of mine, I recorded him running at me, and then I used that video as a base, and I drew over it. And then the head I drew freehand, like, you know, moving around and stuff. So this was truly just like a sketchbook kind of, I have like an animation sketchbook. And a lot of the things you're about to see are just sketches I did in my phase of unemployment, where I was like, I just, you know, want to play around and do these like 5 second things, 'cause I just have 3 hours tonight and I'm just going to do whatever. And the crazy thing is that a lot of these little sketches that I did have gotten me jobs, because I've posted them on Instagram and hashtagged them well. And I asked my artist friends, like, Alex Kiesling, who I graduated alongside and is an amazing, talented illustrator that everyone should look at. Hi, Alex. Like, has a really strong Instagram presence. And I look at my friends who have really strong Instagram presences before I did, like when I had 200 followers, and I would figure out how they used hashtags and ask them how they grew their followers and how they made relationships with clients through social media, especially during the pandemic. It's huge. So I think just like tapping in and seeing what works for your friends and being nice to people and asking for help and then giving help too is really important. So I just would make so much work when I graduated, just pooping it out, all the work. And then I would put it on Instagram and just hashtag it. And then I have gotten a lot of work from people being like, I really like that 2 second thing. Can we make it a 4.5 minute thing? And I was like, absolutely. Do you have money to give me? And for a long time, that answer was no. And to that, I said, I will not do it. But slowly you start getting clients who do have money, and it's wonderful.
Now, what about this piece? Because I think this was very influential in terms of your early animated pieces, right?
Yeah. So Caleb Wood is a really cool animator. He went to RISD. He graduated from my program. And actually, when I was a senior, he was one of our guest critics. So I got to meet him. And he works in, like, he does a lot of really, like, amazing work. But one of the things he does, which I don't know if he, like, I don't know. I feel like it would be weird because he's so young that he started this, but he's like very much in the beginning of discovering, like drawing every frame on one sheet of paper and then photographing it in a way where it still moves really smoothly, but it kind of has a nice jitteriness to it because you're not like putting each frame on top of it and using, you know, being very, very careful. You're kind of just like looking to the left and seeing what you just drew and drawing the next frame. And so he did a lot of that. And I was just like, this is really cool. I just want to try this and seeing what it is. Because I, like I said, I come from an illustrative background and I really like making like single images. And I love that his animations lived kind of as a single image, but also moved. Like it kind of broke into these two things. And I was like, whoa, that's amazing. That's brilliant. So it was really formative in me just, again, when I teach animation and when I tell people, like when they're like, oh, I've always wanted to do it. I'm like, look, this one piece of paper, you can do it. So, and actually this little guy is really cool because in a little bit, we'll talk about a music video I recently did. And as you can see, this is like 3 frames, maybe 4 frames, but this video is what the musicians that hired me saw on my Instagram that they just saw. I mean, they saw all my work, but this is the one where they were like, we really dig this. And then I got the gig. I didn't even have to pitch myself. So that was really cool. But again, just post things. Like this was another one that people saw that I got a job off of. And it's all really like not a lot of materials, an iPhone on a stack of books, some crayons, a blue pen, and some index cards on a Friday night, you know, when my plans get canceled and I'm just like sitting at my dining table drawing. So that like, it's so fun also because when you're working for no client, which is what all of these are, I'm just like making work for myself. I really tap into something that's different and unleashed, you know, and this is something that I did really recently, which was exploring more like the technology side of things where I taped myself. This is my face. And I put it into like a time displacement and After Effects. And then I animated on top of it and played around with the background and threw some film scratches on top of it and was really like playing around with just movement and shape and color and how like different forms of live action and hand-drawn animation can work together. So even though I'm spending a lot of time working on client-based things, I think I find it really important to make work just for myself and for nobody to see or for like eventually Instagram, but like, you know, in the process, nothing. That's really important to me.
Well, I think it's very encouraging that something that just started out as, what did you say, 4 frames, eventually got you this music video gig, which was ultimately one of your goals as an animator. So I think what I would just say, you guys, don't ever discredit a little sketch or a short little idea you have. It really can turn into something much more significant. We have a question here from Kaylin. Have you ever worked or interned for any of the big companies like Disney, Nickelodeon, et cetera? And if so, how was that experience?
Yeah, I worked for Nickelodeon. I interned there for a summer. It was a really wonderful experience. I worked on their promos team. So it wasn't on their team that worked on any of their shows. It was on the team that did all of their like advertisement and bumpers and things that go like this Halloween and, you know, that kind of stuff. So it wasn't as like creative in the sense of like, oh, I'm working on storyboards for the show, or I'm getting to work, like hear about the new episodes and stuff. But what I did learn is it was between my junior and senior year of college that summer, and I had barely used After Effects, and it actually taught me a lot about how to use After Effects, which is a program that I use endlessly now. So it taught me a lot of like just how to do client-based work. And I think my best thing that it taught me is my boss was this really amazing man. I worked in a really small team, and the head of animation, it was just me, their like design lead and the VP of the team. And he really told me, like, he was like, you're amazing. I would love to have you come back after graduating, but also I would really encourage you to like go and live your life and do fun things and do whatever you want and like mess around for a little bit post-grad. And I really took that to heart. And I think that was some of the best advice I ever got. So I do think working at those companies are wonderful, but also what I think I realize is I don't love working in a corporate environment for more than maybe a couple months. Like I loved working at Nickelodeon for 3 months. It was amazing. But at the end of those 3 months, I was like, okay, cool. Now I want to like make a documentary, or now I want to make a music video. And I think I've learned that about myself, was that I have a lot of energy and I like to disperse it around a lot of things. And for some people, they really like dedicating themselves to like one company and the same kind of projects over and over, which I think is awesome. I just think I realized during my time at Nickelodeon that I really enjoyed that for the 3 months, but then I was like ready to go do something else.
Now, what about Jamie Wolfe?
So Jamie Wolfe is an animator who I was introduced to post-grad. And this was kind of around the time that I was really getting into like my creepy heads and my weird bodies and this kind of jarring color that I was using. And I found Jamie Wolfe and I saw one of her films, Roommates, and I was like, whoa, this is so cool. And also something that Jamie Wolfe does is a lot of music videos. And I was really interested in doing music videos. And I started noticing the kind of style that a lot of people really enjoyed from music videos. And I always thought music videos had to be pretty like beautiful and Disney-like, like the animation had to be really like refined. And I just realized I'm not a very like refined animator. I like to work improvisationally and kind of get like down and dirty and just do whatever and then throw it out. And her work just has like a lot of really fun movement, and her characters are really strange and exciting. And the movement isn't perfect. And there's a lot of like repeats, and it's just so energetic and exciting. And I was like, whoa, the fact that someone would like pay you to do this, like I would pay you to do this if I had any money at all, but I don't. But like musicians who have music and want to put an image to their music are like really into this. And I was like, cool, this is awesome. I get it. And this is something that I'm really excited by. So I saw her work. And then this artist, Amanda Bonaito, I'm so sorry if I said that wrong. They both went through CalArts, actually, the MFA program there, which is really cool. But and I think they're friends. But her work is also, I love her character designs. And she does a ton of music videos. And she does a lot of really cool independent short films that go to festivals. So they're both animators that I saw where I was like, whoa, I love their work. It's so out there. It's so not like what the mainstream music videos I'm seeing are. It has so much energy. The character designs are so cool. And like the storylines are so silly and fun and inventive. And that's when I was like, this is the kind of music video stuff I want to do. Like, I really want to work with musicians who like the style and who want me to explore. So then that's kind of what I did.
That's basically what you did. So we're not going to show you guys the whole music video, but this is a video you finished, what, like 2 months ago? This is really recent, right?
In June, yeah.
Yeah, so we're just going to show you guys a few seconds, but if you want to watch the whole thing, the link is in the video description below, so you guys can check that out later. So let's look at this music video.
I know you got a bum leg, and you think it makes your walk. Alone in your shotgun trailer, from the hill looks like a Chinese lantern. I know you got a bum leg, and you think it makes your walk.
So, what was this like, Titi? You did this in 6 weeks?
I did this in like 6 weeks. It was really crazy. It was right when COVID kind of hit, but That really quick animation that we saw earlier of the cowboy smoking a cigarette, the band saw that and then got to my Instagram and saw a bunch of other videos on my Instagram. And they were just like, we really like your work. Are you available? And I was like, yes, what would you like? And they were like, anything you want. And I was like, this is the best. This is a dream come true. And I asked for an amount and they agreed to it. And the timeline was really like quick, the turnaround, but I was not doing anything. So I was like, I will work my butt off and do this because this is exactly what I want. And it's falling into my lap. And I have this illustration that you're seeing on the screen that I made in like 2018. And I was like, I like this dog. Do you like this dog? And they were like, yeah, we like this dog. And I was like, okay, cool. Like, it was very just like, I like his style and his vibe and he's kind of gross and stuff. And they were like, perfect. And I kept thinking about like deserts and I heard this song and these are my friends, Attaboy, who made this song. They weren't my friends before this. It was very like, they found me on Instagram, but they're awesome people. They're lovely, lovely. And the song is beautiful. It's called Lucky. And so I listened to this song and I just like started visualizing this cowboy on a journey who's very disheveled. And they kind of had a backstory of someone who's down on their luck. So I made that storyboard and that was a final shot that you saw afterwards. And we actually have a really great stream with me and Kat. That's like, what's the difference between storyboards and comics that you guys should see? But it was the most amazing experience. It's the hardest I've ever worked for a client and I will probably never do it again, but, it was amazing. And I have this product that I feel so proud of, and it's probably the first product I've ever done for a client that I like can't stop talking about. Most of the time I'm just like, oh yeah, let's, you know, anyways. And then, but then the Lucky music video, I'm like, guys, this is my baby. Like, I worked so hard and I'm so proud of it.
And SpongeBob is back. Tell us about this.
SpongeBob has always been back in my head. I love SpongeBob. I feel like the environment of Lucky was really important to me. Like, it was less about this cowboy, but more about the fact that he was lost and searching for something and his journey. And I feel like the environment in SpongeBob and like the way the characters move, because they're all like aquatic creatures, and the silliness of it and the strangeness of it was something that I grew up loving. So I wanted to create a bizarre kind of desert environment that was really inspired by SpongeBob and its rejection of physics, I suppose. Like, there's so much in SpongeBob that doesn't make sense. You know, there's a lake underwater and they're all walking on the sand, but they should be floating. And there's all this like strangeness. And in Lucky music video, there's a lot of things that, like, his body, Lucky doesn't look the same throughout the film. He really like moves and looks different, but you can recognize him because of his clothes and the general gist of it. And there's just so much of SpongeBob that I think is makes absolutely no sense, but is so wonderful. And I love SpongeBob so much. So I showed them a lot of SpongeBob frames in my original pitch. I was like, and I like this. I don't know why, but I feel like I'm going to do it. But the cool thing about the Lucky music video is I had a rough storyboard, but I worked super improvisationally and it changed so much. And the best thing about my friends at Attaboy was that they were so down. They were just like, we think you're awesome. This is amazing. And they just like applauded everything I did, which is like, I'll probably never get a client like that again, but it felt so good and validating. And I feel really proud of it.
I mean, that really sounds like a dream project, because it really was exactly what you've been after all these years. And to have a client that's that open-ended and willing to work with your vision is phenomenal. And so, of course, after working your butt off like this, you decided to follow it up with another music video. So let's take a look at it, and then just a few seconds of it. If you guys want to watch it, the link is in the video description below, but then you can tell us how it actually got made. All right. So how did this piece get made? It's such a different look than the Lucky music video.
Yeah. So this was a friend of mine. His name is Tony Davis. And this is a song, Lake Sebago, off of his new album, Golden Year. And he is an acquaintance of mine. We aren't super close, but I know him and he's very lovely. And he was making this album and asked me if I'd want to animate something. So I was like, yes, of course. And we just agreed on trying a new style. And I had a little clip of something that I honestly couldn't even find for this stream, but I had something that was looked like a watercolor. And at this point I was like, his budget wasn't like huge. So I was like, if I'm going to do this, I want it to be something that will add to my portfolio and allow me to experiment with something new. Cause I'm like, I want to better myself with it if it's not going to be like making me super rich. but like he did pay me and he paid me exactly what I asked for. So I will say thank you, because every time a client does that, that's amazing. And you should look for those clients. But I was like, it would be really great to do something right off of Lucky that's so different than Lucky. So I showed him this kind of like watercolor, dreamy, really colorful vibe that's so different than the quirky, bright Lucky vibe, and he loved it. And so we talked about why he wrote the song, what it's about, and also the lyrics of Lake Sebago are so different, and it's like very dreamlike and jazzy, and I felt like stars and clouds really made sense for jazz music. So we just agreed on this aesthetic, and then with him I worked really improvisationally. I sent him an update maybe once or twice a week, and I would just like listen and draw and make something and then just smush it together. And he was really lovely and had really great feedback. So we worked really back and forth. And this is way more experimental. Lucky has a storyline. Like when you watch the music video, you know that there's a story, and at the end there's kind of a resolution to some extent. But this is really just kind of like vignettes, and it made sense with the song and it made sense with the vibe of the song. So I really like that, but it was such a different experience. But back to back, it was really, really fun to work. And yes, both of them were crazy and I needed a break, and I'm taking a break now somewhat. But I think it's important to, like, if you really want something, like I really wanted to make music videos, and then I got two back to back and I was like, of course I'm going to do this. I've been talking to people for so long about how bad I want to do this, and now I'm doing it. Like, I'm not going to slack off. This is what I want. I'm going to do it. So yeah, it was awesome.
And then in 2016, you got roped into this little project that had just finished a Kickstarter campaign that summer. So tell us about Art Prof. What was that like when I gave you that very ambiguous, vague email?
Honestly, it was kind of a godsend, because I had just graduated and I had no idea what I was doing with my life. And you were starting this project and you were like, do you want to do it? And I was like, yeah. I mean, first of all, I didn't even know you liked me. Like, I knew you liked me, but I didn't think you liked me enough to want to hire me to be a part of your baby project, you know, that you love. So it was really cool in that sense. And it was awesome, because one of the things I always loved doing growing up, whatever, was teaching. And it, like, I still do it. And the two things I did growing up always was art, and I horseback rode, and I taught both things. I taught horseback riding and I taught art. And to work, and like I said, I love making art accessible, and especially animation and things that seem really scary. And as an actor too, acting, like things that seem really scary, I love making it accessible and easy, and as easy as it possibly can be. So the fact that Art Prof's entire mission was to make art accessible to people on like a global scale, and really like try and talk to a community and figure out how we can give our like kind of bougie elite college education to just everyone, which I think is something that everyone deserves, was something that I was like, wow, this is amazing. And now I've been a part of Art Prof for 4 years, and thank goodness for that. It's been like a constant in my, I've worked probably 6,000 jobs since graduating, but Art Prof has been like something that I've been doing constant. And like, it's amazing. Sorry, I'm rambling, but it's amazing because like Jordan and I have never actually met. We probably crossed paths at RISD, but I never spoke a word to Jordan until Art Prof. So it's making me build my community, and like the community here, like on Discord and on the live streams, like I love you guys, and it's so fun and awesome. And I think Art Prof is wonderful.
Speaking of fun, we got some bloopers for you guys. You guys ready? Here we go.
I am an independent art school. Hi, I'm Titi, and I'm an. Your thoughts are so important to me.
I have so much footage of you guys. Wow. If you guys are rich and famous someday, I'm going to make a killing selling that stuff to the New York Daily News.
Oh my goodness. Oh my gosh.
We have a question here from Blue Wolf Spirit. I imagine you put pencils in your toes and draw in your sleep. How do you make so many things so fast?
I think just taking off pressure and just doing things to do it and feeling okay to just get rid of it and just making things for fun. I think like so many of the animations that you see that I make in like one sitting or one day. I try not to put a lot of emphasis or importance, and I try not to take myself very seriously. And I try not to take my work very seriously. When I'm working for a client, that's a whole different story. But when I'm just making work for fun, I think tapping into that like childish, primitive state of just like making work and feeling really excited about it and also allowing yourself to hate your work and all of that is so, so important because you're growing. So my answer to your question, Blue, is just make work and don't care about it so much, because in like watching my or looking at my work from elementary school on this stream, I'm so proud of that work. And I'm like, that's so cool. Like little 8-year-old DT, like that's so cool. But I'm sure I brought that work home and was like, Mom, look at how ugly this is. Like it doesn't look like a chameleon or whatever. So, you know, make that work, let it sit. And then in a month or in a year, in 10 years, you'll look at it and be like, wow, that's really cool. So just take the pressure off.
We have a comment from Ulo. Thank you for this talk. I graduated last May in a 3D animation program, was feeling kind of defeated, and this really is inspiring me. Cool. Awesome. Yeah, I think sometimes we watch these artist lectures and people just talk about all their successes and it just feels so distant and far away. And I just love that some of your animation pieces that you post on Instagram only took you an hour. A lot of people think about animation as this epic experience, and it doesn't have to be that way. So I've always really admired that about your work, that it does not have to be some huge, scary, ambitious thing. But as we saw, it did turn into one of those things. So
yeah, and I think that, like, animation is so beautiful and it is so epic, and like Pixar is amazing and all those movies are amazing, but like you can have both, and you can work for Pixar and make these crazy, beautiful, amazing things, but you can also make things, you know, while you're half asleep, and it can all be beautiful and amazing. Like both can exist. And I think that's what I strive to do. Like with Lucky, everything was like with a fine tooth comb. I spent so much time. But then the stuff that I do for Instagram, I just do it and I poop it out and I'm like, okay, cool, whatever. And both things I love equally and they're all my babies. And it is so, so hard. And this industry is really hard and there's so much rejection. Being an artist really sucks sometimes. And it's really hard when you don't have a community of people. But I do think that having a network and community of people is super important to keep your spirits high and to help you out. And then hopefully you can help others out too.
Yeah, I mean, pass it around. That's how I feel about the networking. It's not just a one-way street. I mean, it really is people boosting each other up and seeing where we can take each other. I mean, that's what we've seen here at ArtProf, is that we bounce off of each other so much, which has been just so much fun. If you guys would like to check out Deep Dee's work, it is available on Instagram. We have Deep Dee's website, her Instagram, her two music videos. Both of those links are in the video description below. And remember, ArtProf has a podcast available on Spotify, also on iTunes. And if you guys want to chat with Deep Dee some more, and me, we will be in the ArtProf Discord in the post live streams channel. Please subscribe to the ArtProf YouTube and join the ArtProf family. And thank you so much to our top Patreon supporters who keep the lights up and running here at ArtProf. Thank you to everybody for watching the stream, for your comments, for your questions. Thank you so much. We will see you next time. Bye-bye.